I'm delighted to introduce this week's podcast sponsor, barefoot footwear company, Vivo Barefoot. Did you know that 90% of kids are wearing shoes that are too small, which prevents their normal natural growth? And Vivo Barefoot shoes keep feet as barefoot as possible because that is the best way to ensure feet stay naturally strong and healthy. They actually increase foot strength and stability by up to 60%. I have known about them for years because my husband Guy is a big fan, but now I'm super excited because they've just launched their first ever walker for toddlers and preschoolers. The shoe is called Pluma, meaning feather, and it's lightweight, flexible, and so soft and snug that actually socks aren't needed. So it is the perfect transition from barefoot to footwear. Now, Vivo Barefoot are offering Motherkind podcast listeners a 10% discount. So use the code MotherkindVB on their website to take advantage of this fantastic offer. That is Vivo Barefoot website and use the code MotherkindVB. Back to the episode. Welcome to Motherkind, sponsored by Stokke. It's me, your host, Zoe Blasky, and this is the show that's going to help you feel more confident, connected, and empowered in motherhood. This week's guest is the gorgeous Jasmine Hemsley. She is a well-being expert and a three-time best-selling author. I've wanted to speak to Jazz for a long time, so this chat was just a complete joy. We talk about exhaustion because she has two little ones and she was exhausted on the morning we recorded. So we really get into some of her go-to tools for when you feel that horrible, foggy, I can't do it feeling. We also talk about Ayurveda, which I just find absolutely fascinating, and how these ancient practices can help us today. I think even listening to Jazz in this episode, you are going to feel calmer and more grounded. Her energy is just so gorgeous. I really hope that you love it. Before we get to the episode, can you do me a favor and share it with someone that you know? Please, can you pop it in a WhatsApp group, share it on social media, or just tell someone about it? We don't spend a penny advertising the podcast, so you would have discovered this show by someone sharing it with you. So can you do me a favor and pay it forward? Thank you so much. Here's the episode. Oh, Jazz, welcome to Motherkind.
Thank you for having me.
I've wanted to chat to you for a long time.
And we've chatted a lot in the corridor already.
We have. I feel like we've already done a podcast outside.
Maybe.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thank you very much. All the better for being up and out of the house. I had a bit of a crazy night with a night terror toddler. So I might be a bit slurry this morning, but yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
How have you found the transition from one to two? Because you've got a three-year-old.
Just about to turn three.
Yeah.
And a just turned nine-month-old. Gosh, I found having one child different because it was just so different. And then the second one, in so many ways, he's easier, but there's so many transitions with the toddler as well. So it just feels like you're juggling two different ages and getting less sleep. So yeah, it's hard, but doable. It just means priorities change and have to look to replenish your energy in different ways, I think.
Yeah, how do you do that?
Getting outside as much as possible, because it's so easy because I work from home, to just organize everyone. Everyone else goes, you know, Mahi will go to the library or go to kids club, or you know, my other half will walk the dogs, and it's so easy for me to get everyone up and ready and out the house, and then just to sit there in my pajamas and think, I'll just quickly get some emails done.
6 hours later.
6 hours later.
That's what I do all the time.
Sometimes it's lovely. Sometimes it's just so like, I can do this.
Yeah.
You know, embrace it. Yeah. And then other times it's like, I stink. Is there any point in changing? Because I don't have time to shower before I go to bed, so I'll just stay in this. And you know, just even this morning, I had a rough night, but just getting up, showering, you know, putting body oil on my body, all of those things, you know, like soothing my nerves and my hands as I kind of rub it in, all those things made me feel very alive. So I kind of have a mix of both. And that's I have a routine that is a mixture of things that work for me every single day.
Yeah, that exhaustion, just when we were chatting earlier, I haven't had that bone level up all night exhaustion for a while, but
yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
It's so hard.
And it's kind of, at the time in the night, you just, panic that how are you going to function the next day?
That's it. You're paying it forward. I used to be like, right, it's 2 a.m. Should probably be asleep by 3. And then I've got to get up at 6. That's 3 hours. And then you keep continuing doing the maths.
Yeah. This is where kind of working on my vagus nerve has really helped. So I naturally, I mean, I follow Ayurveda, the Indian philosophy, ancient Indian philosophy. And so there are many things in my arsenal that I've worked out work for me. So things like humming, singing, doing the old gratitude practice helps me to flip and have more perspective and things. And also while, you know, flipping me into parasympathetic mode, so calming my nervous system. The funny thing is, because you're in the blur of the sleepless nights and you think you're asleep and then you realize you've been going over the same kind of calculations of how tomorrow is going to be going to happen for the last hour, it's only then I'm like, oh my goodness, Jazz, you are actually awake. Let's use a tool. So I feel like I've got the tools, but I'm not grabbing them as quickly as I can because I'm in such a blur. But the tools are there and then they work so well.
What would your go-to be then if you're sort of like, you're feeling that, it's almost like a fog, isn't it?
Yeah.
What would be one that you
say? I say sometimes it feels like I've got cling film on my eyes. Yeah. I've got this foggy brain. And I just went to get my eyes tested. So I just turned 44 last week and I'm sure I qualify for a free eye test somewhere. But so I went to get my eyes tested and I hadn't had it done in years and there were so many more machines. It was so much more advanced. And I just thought they're going to tell me something terrible because I really am struggling with my eyes. And they were like, no, left eye's perfect. The right eye, you struggle a bit with anything close up. I can't remember if that's long or short now. It's like, is that it? There's not something worse than that. And they're like, no, you can have glasses to help and things. And I realised, obviously, a lot of it's tiredness. Yeah. So I'm going to start as soon as possible implementing some eye exercises that I know about. So that's my plan when I'm lying in bed trying to fall asleep, is just to move my eyes a lot behind my eyelids. And
what does that do?
I just think we are looking at screens so much, and I work from my phone so much more than I did before having the children. I think it's just a lot of eye strain and tiredness, and I think kind of working the muscles around the eyes, getting the blood flow there, getting the prana or the chi, the life force energy around it, I think that's going to really help. Splashing your eyes with cold water in the morning is something that I've been doing as the last week or so. So warm water on the face, but cold water in the eyes is quite refreshing. And another thing that I haven't done but I know about, is rose water on a cotton pad on the eyes is very, very soothing. So now that I know I don't have a real terrible problem with my eyes, it's time for I have to do something about it.
I remember being convinced that I had early onset Alzheimer's.
Really?
Because I just couldn't grab words. And I realised it was exhaustion.
I was worried about this podcast. I was thinking, I just can't seem to find words, and then I can't explain myself, and I feel as frustrated as my toddler.
Yeah, it's quite a good insight to how they must be feeling, exactly. Right? When they're like, oh, I can't get
that.
And
how long did that last?
Well, yeah, I'm just out of it.
Oh, no. For the 4-year-old. Okay.
It's when they start reliably sleeping through.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, right, I know if I can sort myself out at the end of the day, which is a whole other ball game.
Yeah.
Not get into that, you know, doom scroll bit. If I can get all tech off, get in bed at 9, sleep by 10, then I can get, you know, 8 hours, and then life is very good.
Yeah. I think you have to aim for the 9 to be asleep by 10.
Yeah,
don't you?
That's what I do.
And if something piques my interest at any point between those hours, between 9 and 10, forget it. I'm up until midnight minimum, because I know that the baby's going to wake up for a feed again, and I start getting that the horrors of how am I going to get through the night. I think that's one of the things I really noticed, that I didn't notice so much my daughter, was how in the first few months of having my second baby, I dreaded the evenings, because it was a twofold of, where's the day gone? I've achieved nothing.
Yeah.
I had to completely reframe that. You know, I talk to my friends all the time about how we're so busy getting nothing done. And then suddenly it's bedtime and you know you're not going to have a good night's sleep. So you've been waiting for bedtime all day and you know that when it comes, it's going to be sticky. So, using the tools has been brilliant. So my go-to last night, because my daughter had a night terror, was humming, but imagining humming, because I couldn't really hum because I didn't want to wake my boy up, even though and I just wasn't awake enough to kind of get into it. So imagining myself humming, I find is really, it's super subtle but very powerful. So I kind of imagine that vibration in my brain and my throat, and that is very calming and also gives my mind something to do rather than jump into the future or ruminate on the past. So it's like an activity because the brain likes to have something. And I quickly fell asleep again. So
tell us the link between humming and vagal tone and what that means, that vagal tone.
So the vagus nerve is a nerve that runs kind of behind here from the back of the head and then goes down into the body, and vagus means the wanderer, I think, in Latin. And it, because it hits so many organs, but it's also, they think, the connection between the mind body connection. You know, how toned that nerve is how quickly you recover from stress. So it's super, super important. One of the things I do if I'm standing up before bed and is kind of roll down. So I'll do a slow roll with my head down, put my hands on the floor, and then slowly roll up again. I do that about 3 times. So that kind of stretches. That's a nice stretch on the nerve. The other thing you can do is lots of tapping and massaging around there, and then humming and chanting. Humming, chanting, singing, whatever you like. So it's the nice kind of even tones, the vibrations that go along it. So it's something most people could do. Breath work as well, obviously.
I've got really into breath work.
Yeah.
I honestly, people don't believe me when I talk about this. I feel like I've been given a new nervous system.
It's incredible.
Times
isn't
when
it?
Yeah. I would have reacted or been hijacked by something happening or been triggered, or I just don't feel it's remarkable. And I have to put it down to breath work because that's the big thing that I've changed.
It makes you feel, I would say, it builds this resilience, and it gives you time and space to be proactive rather than reactive. And also things that really don't matter, just it's water off a duck's back, isn't it? So that's what you're noticing.
I just still can't quite, I mean, I know all the research is there, I've read it all, but I still can't quite believe my lived experience of it, that I just go to a class once a fortnight because my friend teaches it where I live.
And that effect lasts for two weeks. Wow.
Because it's so, like, I'm not into psychedelics, but it feels like a psychedelic experience to me. Like, we do, what's it called, holotropic, where you sort of, exactly. And very quickly I'm like floating, I'm seeing things, I'm going back into my childhood, I'm healing stuff, I'm seeing visions of me doing things in the future. It's just unreal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I think these classes, this is what's so brilliant about the kind of the time we're living in, is we have access to these alternative practices that are ancient, really, really old.
Yeah.
And when we say breath work, there are so many types of breath work, aren't they? So my one would be in bed would be box breathing. So four in, hold for four. So four in, hold for four, four out, hold for four. So go around like that. Or I concentrate on having a longer out breath. I do it through my mouth or my nose, whatever feels comfortable at the time. So the longer out breath kind of tells your body, because the mind and the breath are like two fish that swim side by side. So when the mind is very active, you know, you consciously use the breath, long, 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 long exhales, tells my mind that I'm safe and it's time to wind down and, you know, just to chill really. And I find that really, really effective. And then the holotropic breathing, I did lots before I got pregnant, and there was one guy, Richie Bostock. Have you heard of him?
He's been on the podcast.
Oh, he's brilliant. Love him. And that was really powerful and also quite trippy for me, because for me, it felt like I was getting out of control and I didn't love that. And then once I embraced it, wow. I find it
quite trippy. Yeah, really expansive. I can't believe how amazing it's been for me. It is incredible.
And I mean, the fact is only every two weeks.
It's just like, yes, it's unreal. And I remember learning that early in motherhood, actually, that about how I was breathing around my daughter. Like, I used to find it really, really stressful, like everyone does, when I couldn't calm her crying. And my first little girl used to cry a lot. And then I started really reading about when I breathe into my chest, like you were saying, that's telling my body something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm co-regulating with her, something's wrong. And so she's crying more. So I just did this one simple shift, which is what you're talking about. I started just making my out breath longer. She would start crying, I'd make my out breath longer. And it was like a miracle.
Yeah.
She would just, not instantly, but the longer I did it, she would just
fall in with it. Yeah.
Down.
As well.
I was like, oh my God. Like, all these conversations that you see online about, you know, do this, try this, do this, you know, it's like just that one thing, like changing our breath is what is what worked for me to calm her. I mean, and it calms me.
Yeah, totally,
We're co-regulating all the time.
I think, you know, it's a lot of people think, oh, this is something you have to work up to, you know, as if like I can't be a gymnast overnight. It's loads of work and dedication. So when people hear, oh, you can do the X, Y, Z, they think, oh, I'll get around to it at some point. But they don't realise that actually it's so powerful in the moment.
Yeah.
And the practice is actually just keeping it up.
Yeah.
Rather than you've got to get good
at it. It's more just remembering it, I feel. Yes. Because like when something kicks off, the other day they were both screaming at me. I definitely went into my stress response. Yeah. I could feel that flight response kicking in. I just wanted to like run out the room and leave them to it.
Yeah.
Which I didn't. I managed to stay in the room. And then I was like, oh yeah, breathe. And then I only did it for like a few seconds, and that gave me enough bandwidth to then be like, right, what is going on here? What do I need to do? Oh, what, my nervous system wasn't hijacking me anymore, could actually be a parent.
Yeah.
But it's just remembering it.
Yeah, it is remembering it. So that's it. That's the practice, just making it something that you go to straight away. And then, you know, in that lesson, if you can vocalize that lesson in some way, I think your children also learn, so that they can learn that, oh, mummy's feeling like this. And then she's out loud saying she's going to use this tool, and that they'll remember it themselves, I think. Because for me as well, you know, it was all pretty good until she got to about 18 months, and then the frustrations for her kicked in, and, you know, she was less compliant, if you like, you know, less willing to go along with what mummy said. And suddenly you're dealing with a whole personality here that's just not matching the fact that you need to get out the door or go somewhere. And I feel myself, you know, wanting to resort to phrases and things that would annoy me as a child. And so, I'm conscious of that, but I'm struggling. And then I remember, do you know what? Just regulate yourself, Jazz. Just really regulate yourself, and then she will follow. And so it's exactly, you know, that thing.
It's so interesting that. And I had an incredible psychologist on who said that in times of stress, you go back to your earliest memories, basically, your earliest coping tools. So that's when we find these things coming out of our mouths that were said to us that we said we'd never say. It's because we're stressed and we just go straight back there. It's fascinating, isn't it?
So the fact that we can kind of use these techniques when our children are young and they'll remember that, that'll be part of their arsenal of tools is incredible. Someone's like, Jazz, if we, because there are times when I'm like, one more scream and I'm going to scream, you know, and you can feel your whole body tightening up. And then I'm like, okay, just work on yourself, work on yourself, work on yourself. And then it feels like it's not working. And then slowly everything's falling into place. And you're like, it actually works. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
No, the other day I was like, I'm at the end of my tether, girls. And I was like, oh my God, I remember my mum saying that to me so and how, many
and I watched
times.
My daughter react with a stamp her feet in, you know, we were both stamping our feet at each other. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this isn't going anywhere.
There's like
come
two
on, Jess.
Kids in the room.
Exactly. And so, yeah, it's all well and good thinking you want to be a conscious parent or you want to be more conscious in the way you respond and stuff. But yeah, you have to keep working on yourself is what I found.
Yeah, and we can't do it perfectly.
No, we can't. Oh, and
like,
when
love the 30% rule, which is like if you do it 30% of the time, you're good.
Yeah,
like, and okay, I'll take
and
that.
Even if you're aware of what you're doing, that's already half the problem solved.
Exactly.
I think you're aware of it, so you know that you know. There's times that I still yell, even though seconds before I'm like, you're about to yell, don't yell, you know, and I still do it, and then I'm like, okay, I'm human. I've just showed my daughter I'm human, and now this is how I'm going to recover.
Yeah.
So
sometimes you need to yell. Sometimes like there's no other way to get that energy and that frustration out. But then it's just the repair, isn't it?
Yeah. And your child has to see, I think, have these emotions, have these outbursts, and be able to repair yourself, because then they learn
exactly
what to do.
Yeah, that's so right. And what about nutrition? Because you're someone that I really look to.
Oh, thank you.
What should I be eating to get some energy?
Oh my gosh, I've been having the time of my life with the double breastfeeding excuse. It sounds crazy, and I talk to my mum a lot about this, but it's the easier that the food is to digest, the more nourishing it is, you know. So if you look at ancient cultures, you know, Asian culture, I'm half Filipino, you look at traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, which I follow from India. Both of those have something called congee, they say in Chinese, or kanji in India, and they're rice gruels. So most of us would look at that and go, "Where's the nutrition in that?" You know, but it's been cooked so long, and it's so liquid. It's literally like it's pre-digested. So it's like it's a very soothing and nutritious food. You add some spices to that to help the digestion as well. And it sounds crazy, by the way, as a nourishing meal. But it's something that I go to when my digestion's off, and often when I'm tired and I've had a stressful time, my digestion's off. And so actually going for a big bowl of kale and, you know, all the superfoods in one is a lot for the body to process on top of being tired. We forget that we have to essentially cook that food in our stomach and then extract the nutrients and then deal with the waste. And so nutritionally, if you were to test it in a lab, great, it's full of all the vitamins and minerals that you want, but can your body actually convert it? So that was a big kind of learning curve for me when I first went to Ayurveda. When I'm stressed, choose the most easy to digest food, and you're going to get more from it than loading yourself up on goodness that you can't convert. And when you can't convert it, it actually just putrefies in the body and becomes metabolic waste. So you're actually wasting that food, which sounds crazy, right? So soups and stews are a go-to.
Just comforting as well. Really comforting. It's what you need when you're really tired.
And then you're hydrating at the same time, you know, because often my penchant. My penchant, not my pain au chocolat. My penchant is pain au chocolat. Is dry things like crackers,
crisps,
crunchy.
Are my go-to.
Totally,
I love a crisp.
Totally love a crisp. But they're quite drying on the body, and then obviously they're salty, so they're drying again on the body. Yeah. And when I was breastfeeding, obviously needed lots of water. And what I found was I wasn't getting enough liquid in the day. And then at night I was chugging on bottles of water, because obviously being woken up all the time, which is hardcore on the kidneys. Mm. So I was definitely better with my firstborn. And obviously I had, Nick was able to help me with the food a lot more. And then the second one, he's running around after the firstborn and I'm kind of stuck. But every time we kind of veer off course, you know, we have pizza night Fridays, where we started it in lockdown, and it was our way of just breaking up the monotony of the week. Watch Gardener's World, that's kind of our thing. But then after that, the next day, we go back to things like quinoa porridges, amaranth pancakes, scrambled eggs, savory for breakfast. So I'll have kind of savory soups. There's a Filipino dish which is made with kind of long cooked chicken bone broth that's very Chinese actually in its origin, and rice with a bit of lime and some spring onions, and it's just really comforting and delicious. So with the Ayurveda, you try to go warm and cooked in the morning, because digestion's not strong. Then your most complicated meal at lunchtime, when digestion is stronger, so that could be your three courses eating out with your friends, or something that's a bit raw or maybe heavier to digest, like meat and beans, or things that kind of clash, like not great food combinations, because digestive fire is stronger. When the sun is higher, the digestive fire is stronger. And then as the sun comes down again, that evening meal, you want it to be lighter again. And I kind of had an early evening meal, knowing that I had a whole night ahead of me, and then lots of kind of nutritious little snacks that I could then eat when I got hungry, because you don't want to be hungry. You definitely don't want to be hungry. You don't want to overeat. So it is a constant kind of checking in with yourself. Do I need this, or am I just exhausted, or am I just changing things up? Because we know that when we have a bad night's sleep, hormones mess up telling us how full we are. And then we have what I call the gremlin. The ghrelin is a hormone that basically makes you want to eat more and more and more because you're so tired.
I definitely have that.
The ghrelin.
I think
you call it ghrelin. So we know scientifically that that's a thing. So the other night I managed to go to bed at 7:30 and I stayed in bed till 9, and I don't think I've ever been so relaxed because I got that really good night's sleep in, and I hadn't had dinner. And it was just one of those ones where I thought, do you know what? I need sleep more. Whereas normally I'd panic if I don't have dinner.
Yeah, I panic if I don't have dinner. That I'm going to wake up in the night hungry.
Yeah. So just keep something close by, and that kind of reassures me I don't have to go down in the night. And I have a flask of hot water always, even before I had babies. And now I've got a double flask of hot water, because sipping warm water is very soothing on the body as well. Helps to relax the body, and also doesn't quash dampen your digestive fire. So that's really important too. Drinking too much dampens the digestive fire, and then you try to eat a meal, all your digestive enzymes, all the acids and everything are diluted. So again, it hinders digestion. So that's what a lot of these ancient philosophies are way more about digestion than what's on your plate.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stresses, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. And therapy is a space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. Therapy is just an incredible, safe, non-judgmental space. I absolutely love it. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which I think as busy mums is what we all need. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/motherkind today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/motherkind.
Welcome to Mum's the Word, the parenting podcast,
where we answer the questions you want to hear about parenthood
and provide you with real, honest advice for every stage of your parenting journey.
Whether you're a parent-to-be, a new mum like me, navigating those sleepless nights,
or a more experienced parent facing the challenges of raising older kids like me,
we've got you covered with relatable stories, expert insights, and plenty of laughs along the way.
So grab your headphones, a cup of coffee, or maybe something stronger,
and let's get real about parenting.
We're not going to be sugarcoating anything. From punamis to piles, nothing is off limits at Mum's the Word.
It's a podcast for all the parents out there, our own little club.
Mum's the Word.
Listen wherever you get your podcast from.
And hit follow so you don't miss an episode.
This episode is sponsored by Tea India. If you know me, you will know I am obsessed with tea. So I'm really excited to tell you about Tea India, especially their chai. I absolutely love chai. It's a blend of cinnamon, cloves, ginger, cardamom, and each cup of Tea India's chai is just so comforting. There's no additives, no compromises, just real tea and real spices, keeping it simple and satisfying. I'm also excited to tell you about the all-new decaf masala chai. It's everything you love about masala chai, minus the caffeine kick. So if you're pregnant or for any reason you don't want caffeine, this is the drink for you, especially if you are craving a deliciously warm decaf cuppa that does not compromise on taste. You can find Tea India in all supermarkets nationwide and their decaf masala chai in Waitrose. You can also purchase Tea India on their website, teaindia.co.uk, and use my exclusive discount code MOTHERKIND10 for 10% off your first order. Tell us more about Ayurveda. I'm so fascinated by it. So you get categorized in different doshas? Yes.
Well, you get recognized. So basically, there's these three biological energies. So Vata, Pitta, Kapha, and they're made up of the five elements, ether or space, air, fire, water, and earth. So those five are come together as three. So we kind of call them almost personality types, but I mean, everything is either made up of Vata, Pitta, or Kapha in the universe. When you yourself have all three, so everything has all three, just in varying amounts, and those amounts are unique to you, and that's your unique constitution that you're born with. As we get older, the seasons, our age, the people we hang about with, the environment we live in, is it hot, is it cold, impacts our doshas. And so you can be born predominantly a dosha type, and then easily, unless you're working on balancing that in all your different actions, you can be a different dosha can be aggravated. So normally I'm a Vata Pitta, or maybe a Pitta Vata. They run so close. So basically I'm almost predominantly Vata Pitta with a little bit of Kapha. So I tend to be always thinking and always doing, and that's why I adopted those vagus nerve practices, which are very grounding, which is what Kapha is, quite early on. But anything can be aggravated. So I could have a Kapha aggravation. So during a cold, mucus, feeling sluggish, stagnant, all these things. It's like too much earth and water in your body. So then you looked for more fire and lighter foods, so airy foods and warming things for yourself. So pitta types, that's the fire energy, they tend to be always doing, always on, and aggravation can look very judgmental, hot under the collar, frustrated with people who are not keeping up with them.
No, that's me.
That's you, yeah. And the jobs we do can bring that out of you.
Yeah.
So you can be very kapha, but be in an environment that draws out the other doshas from you. And so you have to honour really what your constitution is. And then vata, which is the other side of me, is the very creative side. I talk a lot, you move a lot, you love new things, you're terrible at routine. But consequently, you can then go to bed and your mind is still going and going and going and going and going. And again, that can affect all people, whatever your type.
How does knowing those, like if someone's listening, they're like, okay, sounds a bit out there. How does knowing that help someone in motherhood, for example?
So recognizing those characteristics in your children, recognizing them in your partner, recognizing them in yourself. So if you're made up of these three energies, you can kind of recognize from your cough and your cold. Is it dry and barking and hot, or is it cold and wet and mucousy, or is it, you know, you start to see that there are so many types of them and then what to do next. Or food, for example. So you might find if you've got a child who's got a pitta aggravation, you know, they don't do well in hot food. It irritates them. It could be hot temperature, could be hot spicy. Sour is another quality of heat. So maybe they get kind of rashes or something when they eat sour foods like lemons or vinegar and things like that. So it's a really interesting way for even a novice to kind of
a few years ago getting really into it and doing one of those online
quizzes.
You can do
I've got
quiz.
One on my website.
Okay, great. Yeah. So everyone can go and have a look at it. And I think it said that I was quite balanced across the three.
So then you're more tridoshic. So that means really you've got kind of equal of all three. And some people think, oh, that's the optimum. But no, your optimum is what you're born with. So if you're got kind of equal amounts of all three, it means I would pay attention to the seasons and your environment, because then aggravate.
Yeah,
one.
I mean that makes sense actually. Mm. I mean, isn't life just trying to get back to what you were born with?
Exactly, just trying to get
just
back to you.
Just trying to peel the layers away.
It's the layers
of conditioning.
It's the conditioning. It's the energetic things. It's the stories we take on. And that's why I do sound baths, because I find it's such a lovely way. I mean, I've had a meditation practice, a strong one, for 14 years now, but you still have to have the. You have to do it, basically. You have to get on and sit up and make the effort to do it.
Yeah.
But with a sound bath, you kind of just like lie down and just allow by surrendering, you're allowing yourself to go into a kind of this parasympathetic mode where you can rest and digest. And by rest and digest, not just your food, but your emotions, the things that have happened to you today, as well as the things that happened to you yesterday or yesteryear, or even, I remember one of my sound bath sessions a long time ago was being called a name when I was six in the playground. And so my rational mind had dealt with that a long time ago, like, don't be silly, it was just a child, but you know, and just the child speaking out. And but the emotion was still stuck in my body. And so when it came up, I remember being really weirded out by it, and then I kind of looked at it and looked at it and looked at it, and then I gave it the attention it wanted, and then it just dispersed. I just breathed into it and it went.
Yeah. And I think those practices for us mums, like, where it can feel so hard to find even 5 minutes to sit and do a meditation practice, putting on something like that, like a sound healing, you know, on your website or wherever you find it, it just feels easier, and it's so gorgeous.
Oh,
I just
so
love
gorgeous.
It
is gorgeous, and it's something that, you know, when I do the sound baths, I say, you know, we've created this space that's lovely and warm, you know, yoga studio, or I just did one at a club in the middle of Soho. And the sirens were going off outside, and I said to the people organising, I said, let people still come in, you know, to the mats at the back, even if they're late, because you're always late in London, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because actually we can use those noises to keep us in the present moment. So people that are going to fall asleep are going to fall asleep. That's wonderful. They're getting rid of fatigue. But for the rest of us, it's not necessarily a Zen feeling. It's just I am practising being present, and I'm going to watch my thoughts come in, and I'm going to pay attention to them and then wish them on their way. And I'm going to see the gaps in between those thoughts. And so you're literally practicing the art of doing, which we do very well, and being, which we don't do very well. So it's the yin to the yang. And with our children, you know, are we just, we're going to turn into the cliche of like missing the moments of them growing up, even though we were right there, because we're never right there unless we practice being right there.
I think before I had kids, I thought it was about how much time can I, how much can I be with them?
Yeah.
Now, my thinking has completely changed on that. I'm like, how present can I be there, be with them when I am actually with them?
At what the quality time?
What is the quality of that connection? Not about how many hours, because I've done it where I've been at home, like didn't work for, a, you know, well over a year. And I would say that now my presence and the quality of the connection is far better.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I actually, my partner and I scare each other sometimes because I'll be like putting the baby to bed. I'll be sending a last email or checking something. And then I'll say, Nick, did you bring me that water or that cup of tea? And he said, and he'd be like, I brought it up 10 minutes ago and I spoke to you and I put it right by into your hand. And I'm like, you never. And we know we constantly accuse each other of saying, you didn't tell me that. He's like, we had a discussion about it.
But you're just scattered.
And I'm thinking, really? As am I unable to see that? That's how I, my body's in this room, but my mind is somewhere else.
100%. 100%. And that is what I've really been focusing on these last few years. Mm. Not all the time. I'm talking about like in 15 minute chunks.
Yeah.
Like, can I just play with the girls and try and be there in body and mind? Yeah. And it sounds easy. And anyone who hasn't tried it will be like, whatever. But it's hard.
So hard. So
especially if like moving the block back and forth is boring.
Well, it's not just boring. That. I'm thinking, right, I'm just going to set this up, get her really into it, and then go put the laundry on.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking, actually, no. I'm playing this game with her. We've been conditioned to think that that doesn't give back to us.
Yeah.
And so therefore it's wasted time. We see no value in it. But as soon as somebody tells you, oh my gosh, if you are A, practicing being in the present moment, you are slowing down everything. You're allowing the body to be, you're literally bending space and time. You're super creative in those moments. You're resting your mind, body. You're engaging in play. You're seeing the world with new eyes. If people told you that of moving your block back and forth and allowing your child to lead the game was giving you all that, you'd be like, I'd be up for that.
I remember hearing a podcast once with Jack Kornfield. You know him.
I heard his name.
Yeah, he's like one of those sort of unbelievable, you know, he's been meditating like 50 years. And I was listening to a podcast with him and he said, if you're a parent, you do not need to go on a meditation retreat.
Your children are your meditation?
Yeah. He's like, just sit and push the block back and forth. Yeah, yeah. He's like, you don't need to go on a retreat.
I remember a doctor.
And I remember thinking, that is so true.
I remember a doctor I met in Thailand many years ago. He was like, I'm quite jumpy about mosquitoes because my other half really gets badly bitten. He reacts really bad to it. So I'm very conscious when they're around. We were looking at this technology he had for looking at auras. And Nick and I like jumping about like this. And he's like, no, let them bite. It's a meditation. As I've always thought about
it.
I know, baiting myself and just, you're constantly being checked and tested with your children. And it's like, how are you going to choose to react? Take a breath. And then you've got more choices. I think that's something that's really helped me a lot.
Yeah, that's just one of those unbelievable things that I just think should be out there more.
Oh yeah,
like when you and I first met in person, I came to a launch you were doing, and you taught me about the bones in children's feet, and that was another thing. I was like, I did not.
How did we
know
not
that.
Know this?
Tell
I
us
know.
About the bones in the feet.
At this launch of this, so I did a created a this first walking toddler shoe, and you came to the launch, and there was a lady there who is, I don't know, she works in some, she's a movement specialist, and she said, how did I not know this? So basically the fact that blew everyone's mind was children are born with no bones in their feet.
Then, and I almost didn't believe it. I know,
and at the time I had my second born, and I was like inspecting his feet because I knew that the feet continue developing, but you still think there's going to be little bones in there,
yes,
right?
So
it's soft cartilage, and then until that cartilage starts being compressed, i.e. the child starts walking on their feet, and so my son has kind of wanted to be up on his feet since 6 months. So between 6 and 9 months, those bones, those that cartilage starts to compress into bone. But the bones don't fully develop until late teens or after puberty. So that entire time, your child's foot is basically totally malleable. And so when we put them into restrictive shoes, we're taking them away from their natural shape and development. We're taking away that the kind of the width, their stability, their ability to, you know, the proprioception of working out the surfaces they're working on and walking on, and that feeds to their to the child's brain, and so they understand the terrain and how to move across it. And, you know, having built up shoes also affects the strength of the foot, then the ankle, then the leg, then the hip, then the whole body. So ideally, we want our children to be running around barefoot as much as possible. And when they're not, when we need them to be protected from whatever's on the street, whether it's dirt or something sharp that will cut them, then we want to look for a barefoot shoe that allows the foot room to be in its natural splayed state. So when you look at a child's foot, it's very splayed.
Yeah.
And then we look at our feet, and our feet are, you know, the shape
of a
modern shoe.
I remember on the yoga mat, they always say, don't they, well, the teachers that I've had, spread your toes. Yeah. And I remember being like, what are they talking? I can't spread my toes. And then I look at my kids' feet and I'm like, ah.
And you can just see them using the balance of those digits.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started going to yoga and they wanted me to spread my toes, it actually made me feel a bit sick.
Yeah.
Did you feel that too?
I just thought, I can't. Yeah. I can't. There's nothing to spread.
No. They don't move. So these feet that carry you around every single day.
Well, I had squeezed in my 20s. Oh my God, my poor feet.
I know.
I had squeezed them in shoes. Remember the pointy that were the
fashion? Yeah, yeah, the pointy pointies. Yeah. I've still got some in my loft somewhere.
Yeah, and we would totter around on those for hours, dancing them all night.
I know. I was actually squashing my feet in a lot earlier because...
Well, you were a model, right?
So I was a model. Well, actually, I had quite small feet for a model. So usually the shoes were size 7 and I was a 5.5. Actually, I thought I was a 5.5 for years until I started wearing barefoot shoes, and now I'm more a 6.5. Yeah, so I remember wanting Reebok Classics when I was in my late teens, and I worked out if you could fit into the children's shoe, you saved 30 quid.
Yeah, because no VAT.
So I was squashing my feet into size 5s when I was probably more a 5.5, 6. So I was doing all that damage, and I've just got the very beginning of a bunion on my right foot. But actually now, I mean, I can properly put my fingers between my feet and move them around. They're so much stronger. And yeah, you look at baby's perfect feet. We talk about how gorgeous baby's feet are, and then we don't want to be squashing them. Or I remember being at the park with and meeting a mum, and her child was 6 months older than mine, but he wasn't walking yet. And I thought, oh, should I say something, or is this just not going to be? And he was kind of navigating some hills while walking in her hands, but he had really built up shoes on.
So that's the sort of fashion. Those are the ones that are, you know, you go into any shop and they're the thick soled.
And you know, I'm not going to lie, they feel nice on the feet. They're all, it's like walking on a mattress, isn't it? But then, that's like basically putting a massive block between you and the ground.
Or like you said, it was like oven gloves.
Yeah. Can't feel anything. So we're so into baby sensory classes, and yet we're literally putting oven gloves, essentially like oven gloves on the hands. That feels so annoying, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We're doing that to the feet. So so these plumas are basically very, very thin 2 millimeter soles that you can literally scrunch up and flex. And then the top is woven as well, so it feels like a sock. So what I was looking for was a sock with a protective sole that still flex with the foot. So that's what we designed with Vivo Barefoot.
Well, listen, when I heard that at that launch, I went and told everyone I've ever met.
Guess what?
It's just such an amazing fact. Like, it's just one of those things that it's just amazing, isn't it? Oh, I love this chat.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So nice. I always ask the same question at the end, which is if you could give just one gift to all the mothers in the world, what would you give?
You had me thinking on that one when you sent the questions in advance. I think... And especially as an older mum, so I've had my children at 41 and 44, I just wish all mums had, and it might make me cry, like just more access to mothering the mother, you know, people mothering the mother, because I just think the care that I received from being able to have my own mum there with me and my other half at home, it was lockdown, and having access to Ayurvedic doctors or Vaidyas, Ayurvedic practitioners who could guide me and help me to... with the breastfeeding, with replenishing my energy, with beautiful things to do with the baby that kind of nurtured them in the womb and then afterwards. was just so lovely because I just didn't have time to read baby books. I was overwhelmed by it. I was kind of information overload. And I wanted to trust that I had the wisdom inside me, but I needed help trusting that. And then just also, yeah, just this idea that we have to get up and go. I think women can get up and go again when they've been mothered themselves, and there will be better mothers for it. And I love that we have podcasts like yourself and information now and understanding this fourth trimester. But I hope to see very soon an even bigger change that's universal and that everyone has some kind of access to.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Zoe, for having me. I've so enjoyed chatting with you. Thank you.